At Bet365, we don't do ordinary. We believe that every sport should be epic. Every home run, every hit, every inning, every play. From the moments that are legendary to the ones that fly under the radar. See for yourself when you sign up today and get $150 in bonus bets when you bet just $5. Whatever the sport, whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. 21 plus only. Must be present in Ohio. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and wants help, call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A warm and friendly hello. Welcome to lovely Las Vegas for Ghost to Ghost Hoops with myself, Greg Hoops Spears, and now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. And got a great podcast for you. In the second segment, we are going to be joined by Connor Hope. He is one half of the Hope and Rolf podcast. That is a part of Heat Check CBB. He does absolutely terrific work on the written side of things. He also does amazing work with that podcast, which you're able to find wherever you find this fine podcast. In the second segment, going to be talking about Gonzaga and UCLA Sweet 16 matchups, what we've all seen in general in college basketball with defense-oriented teams being able to get the job done here in March. So we're going to be having that chat in the second segment. In the final segment, going to give you guys picks and analysis on everything that we've got for Monday as we had some bank shots. We don't have any NCAA tournament games, but we've got the CBI going down. We've also got ourselves what used to be the CIT. It is now known as the Basketball Classic. So going to give you guys everything that I've got there and going to be just diving into everything that you want to hear on this podcast. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, what have you, got one of two ways we'll fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please send these into the timeline. And the other way is find an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. I had a few people ask me, is it typical for teams to just completely forget how to play in March? What is the term for college basketball teams that completely crater this time of year? Your answer, March Madness. That is the term that you wind up using for this. It has been very, very crazy. So let's take a look at everything that we wound up getting on a rambunctious college basketball Sunday. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the rowdy recap.
The day started with Illinois trying to give chase to Houston. They wound up being down by a count of 54-49 with about 5 minutes remaining, and then they proceeded to completely melt down. 68-53, the final. First half for Illinois was marred by the fact that you wound up having Andre Curbelo play 10 minutes. He wound up having 2 turnovers, contributed absolutely nothing. The offense was stagnant, and they benched him from there. And then from there, Illinois didn't have a lot going. Kofi Coburn was able to give the team 19 points, 8 rebounds, went 6 of 11 from the floor. I'm not sure why they didn't give him the ball more. And for Illinois, 17 turnovers in this game. Meanwhile, Houston, they only go 6 of 22 from 3-point range, but he wound up having 4 of those 3s made by Kyler Edwards, 15 points, 6 boards, 4 assists. Houston, just 9 turnovers. They did a good job with 6 block shots of their own. Juwan Roberts, Reggie Chaney, both coming off the bench for a pair of blocks. Houston just wound up bringing the fight to Illinois, and it was, quite frankly, not a great day for the Big Ten. I'm recording this with the Texas versus Purdue game pending, and as of right now, the Big Ten is 0-4 as Wisconsin wound up falling to Iowa State by a count of 54-49. With 10 seconds remaining in the game, prior to Jordan Davis being able to get his just last-second three in garbage time to go, the team was 1 of 21 from three-point range. I mean, Wisconsin could not have played worse if they tried. They wound up getting 13 fouls on Iowa State in the first half, and they didn't drive the ball in. They deserved to pretty much lose this game. And Gabe Kalscher, someone who began his career at Minnesota, has a little bit of familiarity with Wisconsin. 10 of 19 from the floor, 22 points. Iowa State, I mean, if you're looking for coaching jobs that have been absolutely tremendous, TJ Otzelberger has now won in the NCAA tournament as many games as Iowa State won all of last year, and both of those games were against the SWAC. We've never seen that before. That is for sure. As Iowa State in this game, they did have 14 turnovers, but they forced a Wisconsin team that, with regards to turnovers per offensive play, coming into the NCAA tournament, was number one in all of college basketball, into 17. Johnny Davis, 17 points, 9 rebounds. He did have 4 blocks. He also did wind up having 4 turnovers. And for Wisconsin, just that bad 3-point shooting. They were laying a house with all those bricks. It was not great. Villanova, they were able to get the job done against Ohio State. 71-61 the final. The big determiner with regards to the spread, in my opinion, was the free throw shooting. Villanova, top team in all of college basketball with regards to free throw shooting percentage, 17 of 20. They were nailed. So Ohio State was relatively solid in their own right, but they go just 6 of 11 at the charity stripe. EJ Liddell, 17 points, 6 boards, 3 steals, 2 blocks. And Malachi Branham, good game for him, 23 points. Problem is, outside these two gentlemen, you had a combined 21 points out of Ohio State. Zedke did give the team 11 rebounds, but for Villanova, they did a nice job being able to control the game with just 9 turnovers. You did wind up having Ohio State win the rebound battle, but Colin Gillespie, 20 points, 4 assists, did a very good job running an efficient offensive attack. Villanova, they wind up going just 8 of 23 from 3-point range, but got the game at their tempo, nice, slow, and controlled. They get the job done. They are going to be going to the Sweet 16. If you, like me, wound up taking 6.5 points with Michigan State, this was brutal. Michigan State up by a count of 74-72 with 2:45 remaining. Not only do they wind up losing the game, I mean, that's something in which Duke being able to pull out the close game, that's relatively to be expected, but to not cover 6.5, that is brutal. 85-76 a final as Duke, they were able to do a good job at the free throw line late. They go 16 of 21 while there. Wendell Moore went 9 of 10 at the charity stripe for Duke. They wound up being able to go just 5 of 13 from 3-point range. And what kept Michigan State in this game, they went 11 of 22 from 3-point range. Gabe Brown, 18 points. He buries 4 out of his 6 triples. Marcus Bingham Jr. was very solid in this game. 16 points, 7 boards, 3 blocks, but Duke, they were able to do a solid job down low, winning the rebound battle by a count of 35-31. For Duke, they also had Mark Williams on their side. 15 points, 8 rebounds, 5 blocks in this contest, and then Trevor Keels comes in off the bench for 12 points. It was just a case in which the backcourt of Duke just completely had the backcourt of Michigan State outgunned in this contest, and Duke advances to the Sweet 16 in the last ride for Coach K. It's the first ride for Mark Adams at Texas Tech, and his ride continues as Texas Tech gets the job done 59-53 as this was a game in which you did not wind up seeing a lot of offense for either team. Texas Tech shoots 35.5% from the floor. Notre Dame, 32.5% from the field. But Texas Tech, number one in all of college basketball with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis in road and neutral court games. And a guy that really wound up making his name last year in March Madness, Kevin O'Banner, while he was at Oral Roberts, 15 points, 15 rebounds. He was the difference maker for Texas Tech, and Texas Tech also wound up winning the turnover battle 11-8. So they're able to get by to the Sweet 16. No cover there, but they were able to get it done. You wound up seeing actually quite a few underdogs be able to come through towards the latter half of the day, as you wound up seeing it be all favorites towards the beginning part of it. Each of your first 3 games wound up going to favorites, and then I believe it was 4 out of the last 5 that wound up being underdogs, including Miami, winning outright against Auburn 79-61. If you, like me, wound up having the over, well, some missed front end of 1-1s, and Auburn shooting 5 of 26 from 3 wound up doing this, as you wound up having a grand total of 133 field goal attempts in this one. In Auburn, they go 5 of 26 from 3-point range. Jabari Smith, just 10 points, 15 rebounds on 16 shots. He did wind up having Auburn do a good job taking care of the ball. 13 turnovers in this one. Miami, they were very solid with only 4 turnovers. For Auburn, it's been a team that all year long they've been able to block some shots, 8 in this contest, and they win the rebound battle 47-39. But big in this game, Cam McGussie, 20 points, 4 steals, 4 assists, 6 rebounds, and then Isaiah Wong, 21 points. He was able to go off, have himself a nice performance at Miami. They've been able to get by these first 2 games of the NCAA tournament despite very poor 3-point shooting. 1 of 14 against USC. Not a lot, but a lot better in this one. 3 of 15. So just imagine what's going to happen if they do wind up draining a couple threes. Purdue, they've been having a little bit of a tough time draining threes as well. They go 6 of 17 against Texas, but good enough to get the job done. 81-71 in a game which they shot 46 free throws to 12 of Texas. I recognize that Purdue should have had more free throw attempts in this game, but I think 46-12 is a little bit extreme there. You wound up having Zach Edey have 11 points and 10 rebounds. He was able to do a solid job in Texas. I will say they were hacking the big men of Purdue quite a bit. There should have been a free throw disparity, I don't know about quite that big, but with that said, Marcus Carr, 23 points, 7 assists, just 2 turnovers. He actually looked solid for Texas on the stretch, and Texas only 7 turnovers in this contest, but Purdue did a good job of being able to get to the line. They outsized Texas 41-28. Now they get the Peacocks of St. Peter's, which that's going to be a lot of fun. And Arizona, they played Kirk Risa on Sunday. He did not look effective, and it very nearly cost them in this one. 85-80. Arizona gets the job done in overtime for Arizona. They gave Risa 27 minutes, 1 of 10 from the floor, 2 turnovers. He wound up having 3 fouls in this game along with his 3 points. You could tell that he just did not look right. Arizona was not functioning very well when he was out there on the floor. But Christian Coloco went a loco along with Ben Mathurin. A combined 20 rebounds and 58 points along with 3 blocks. So those were the guys that were able to get it done for Arizona and for TCU. 22 of 30 at the free throw line. Not too bad for them. 18 of 25 for Arizona, but just 6 of 26 from 3-point range, coupled with Mike Miles having 6 turnovers in this one, really wound up being a little bit costly for them. And then if you're looking at action that is out there a little bit more off the beaten path, we did wind up seeing a closing total between Virginia and North Texas in the NIT of a 109. You wind up having this game be 55-55 at the end of regulation. Goes into overtime. You do wind up having Virginia being able to get the job done. They advance to the Elite Eight of the NIT. 71-69 in the final. So if you wind up taking the over, it was no sweat there. 9 of 17 from 3-point range for Virginia with Armon Franklin, who's quite frankly been awful from distance. Entered in this game shooting 26.5% from 3. He dials it up at 5 of 7 from distance for North Texas. They wind up winning the rebound battle in this game by a count of 35-31. But also for North Texas, you did wind up having Martez McBride give you 21 points. North Texas, 11-14 at the free throw line. Really had been a little bit of a bugaboo for them. And Virginia, just 10 of 19 at the charity stripe. But Virginia, just 6 turnovers. North Texas, 11. So North Texas, their run in the NIT comes to an end. And you always want to be taking coaches that always seem to get their guys motivated. Tony Bennett, I think that he could be in a total pole matchup between the two worst teams in all of college basketball. He would still be inspiring his guys out there in the NIT as well. Vanderbilt, they survive, they advance. They do not wind up closing the closing number. There was a lot of steam that wanted coming in on Vanderbilt, so this closed more around 3 and 3.5. But Vanderbilt, 70-68. They are overtime winners as Scottie Pippen Jr., 11-13 at the free throw line, 32 points. And for Dayton, give them a lot of credit. Malachi Smith winds up going down with an injury in that Atlantic 10 tournament, and Kobe Elvis did a solid job of being able to run the point guard spot. 20 points, 5 assists now. Did wind up having 5 turnovers in this contest. And for Dayton, the reason why they got sent packing, 4 of 16 from 3-point range, a team that overall shoots more around 36% from 3. And for Vanderbilt, they're building some upward momentum with their coach in Jerry Sackhouse. He's been able to do a relatively solid job, in my opinion, has been dealing with injuries throughout much of his tenure. But Liam Robbins, who wound up missing much of the season, he was able to get the team 5 boards and 2 blocks. So that gives Vanderbilt a little bit more on the inside. You're getting a lot out of Washington State right now as well. They wind up going on the road. They take down the Pony Express of SMU, 75-63. SMU wound up in this game going just 4 of 20 from 3-point range. Absolutely terrible. Kendrick Davis, he did his part. 30 points, 3 rebounds. Goes just 2 of 8 from 3, but went 10 of 10 at the free throw line for SMU. 15 of 16 at the free throw line, but Washington State, they're canning their free throws. TJ Bamba, along with Michael Flowers, go combined 13 of 13 from the line. Overall, Washington State, 23 of 26 at the charity stripe. As Flowers is able to give you 22 points, Washington State, they dominate on the glass, 46 of 32. They have been dealing with a little bit of an injury to Muhammad Gay. He was back in the fold in this one, only 13 minutes, but was able to deliver 5 rebounds. DJ Rodman, he was able to come in off the bench. He had 6 rebounds in this game. And Deshaun Jackson, a guy that you want to be taking a look at moving forward for Washington State, 9 rebounds per game. I do think that taking a look at the NIT does give you a little bit of insight as to next season. I don't think that you're going to find that with Xavier in Florida, because right now they've got interim coaching regimes and they hired on new coaches. But with that said, Xavier was able to win a brick fest against Florida by a count of 72-56. Florida goes 6 of 30 from 3-point range. Xavier, 4 of 20 from 3-point range. So combined 10 of 50 from distance out of both of these teams. But Xavier, they're able to get the win because they won the rebound battle by a count of 43-32 for Xavier. 18 turnovers in this game. Florida, 15 turnovers in this contest. not a lot of takeaways there because, well, these are a pair of coaching regimes that they aren't going to be in place within the next, next few weeks. So that is certainly something that is just a little bit of a hilarity, in my opinion. Abilene Christian, if you're looking out there at the CBI, they get the job done against Troy. They were able to get up double figures, and they just wound up putting their foot down on them very, very effectively. UNC Wilmington, a team that really surprised out there in the CAA. They were able to get it done against VMI by a count of 93-78. And I do think that UNC Wilmington certainly does deserve their flowers because this is a team that, if you take a look at them after their loss against Jacksonville, they were a team that was 3-5. Now here they are. Ever since then, they have went 21-4. I mean, that is a dramatic turnaround for a team that many people, including myself, thought was going to be towards the bottom of Conference USA. I had William and Barry behind them, but certainly a little bit surprising here as Michael Kuru was able to give you 27 points. UNC Wilmington, 10 of 25 from three-point range, 21 of 25 at the free-throw line. And for VMI, they went 23 of 25 at the charity stripe. You did wind up having Jake Stevens give you 23 points. VMI, very effective offensive team, a very, very poor defensive team, and that wound up hurting them. Northern Colorado's been relatively poor on defense, but they get it done against a Florida Atlantic team that was playing in their home state because all these games in the CBI there in Daytona Beach, Florida, 74-72, the final for Dallin Counts. He was able to make everything count. 23 points. Bodie Hume, 11 points, 11 rebounds. So Northern Colorado, they advance despite shooting just 7-24 from three-point range because Florida Atlantic, on their two-point shot attempts, it did not wind up going great for them. They wound up attempting 54 of them. They wound up making 21, and for Florida Atlantic, they wound up not being able to win the rebound battle against a Northern Colorado team that may have been a little bit suspect on the glass. Kurzunkic able to give this Northern Colorado team 12 rebounds. So they were able to get it done there. Boston U, they get it done against UNC Greensboro by a count of 71-68 for Greensboro. Demonte Buckingham had in this game 21 points, but for Greensboro, a completed utter melt job. They were up 13 points in the first half, and then they made like your buddy at the bar and could not close as you wound up having Boston U go 8 of 19 for 3-point range and 17 of 18 at the free throw line. Greensboro, 12 of 19 at the charity stripe. That wound up being the difference in this one along with Boston U. Turning the ball over only 9 times in this game as Sukmail Mathan, 18 points, 9 rebounds for Boston U. And then St. Bonaventure also able to go on the road. They got the job done in the NIT, so they are on to the Elite Eight. And take a look at everything that we've seen in college basketball, what we wound up getting on Sunday. This is between the NCAA and the NIT, the CBI, what have you. Underdogs wound up going 10-7 overall with regards to college basketball action on Sunday with a 9-8 record for overs. So overs were able to do relatively well. And if you take a look at the last 7 days in general, what we've seen in college basketball, this is all tournaments lumped together. 52 overs of 41 unders, and underdogs have won 49-43-1 against the spread. So that's what we've all been noticing in college basketball. Now let's take a look forward at the Sweet 16. Connor Hope does a great job over there with HXCBB. He is a man that does a podcast of his own, the Hope and Rolf podcast. We're going to be chatting with him next about Gonzaga. We're going to be taking a look forward at Arizona as well. The intrigue with their matchup against Houston, his takeaways from the first week of the NCAA tournament, and so much more right here on Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Craig Hoops Peterson, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Spears, and now part of the VSiN family podcast. It is always a pleasure to get any of the gentlemen of HXCBB on the podcast. So today, it is Connor Hope who's going to be joining me. You're able to hear him on the Hope and Rolf podcast as R-A-U-F on Rolf. You're able to find that wherever you get your podcast. He does absolutely terrific work over there at HXCBB on the written side. Also participates in the Rockin' 25 poll to be able to follow HXCBB on Twitter. That's at HXCBB altogether. And for Connor, you're able to follow him on Twitter at ConDorianFM. These guys do great work all throughout the college basketball season, but into the offseason as well. I'm sure that these gentlemen are going to be joining me once the NCAA tournament wraps up and we take a look at the transfer portal. And Connor, great to have you aboard. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Greg. Always a great time.
And Connor, first things first, got to be talking about your alma mater in Gonzaga. They've been able to survive in advance, but things have been a little bit hairy for this team as they wound up in that game against Georgia State, a team that should not have been a 16 seed, by the way. They were only up by 2 with about 11 minutes remaining before they wound up going on their blindside charge. And then in the second game against Memphis, Memphis wound up pushing them to the brink. Certainly, Memphis is a team that probably shouldn't have been in the 8-9 matchup themselves, but taking a look at this Gonzaga team, what were your real takeaways from these first two games? Because I do think that it sets up for a relatively interesting Sweet 16 game against an Arkansas team that they've been able to find their stride here the last few months of the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think what you've seen over the last few weeks, I mean, starting with that game in Moraga against St. Mary's. St. Mary's did the same thing in the WCC tournament. And then even in these first two tournament games, is that people have been starting to realize that the only way to beat this Gonzaga team is to play physically. And not that Gonzaga can't match up with teams that play physically. It's just that slows down their everything they want to do offensively by just being a physical presence, getting back on defense, slowing down that transition game. And it worked. The issue is, and you saw it in both games against Georgia, in the game against Georgia State, as well as the game against Memphis, with physical play comes a lot of fouls. And staying out of foul trouble, especially against these Gonzaga bigs, is an issue that teams are going to have if they try and play very physical defense against them. And so you saw it in both games. And I think the issue with Memphis is Memphis, if they had stayed focused for a full 40 minutes, probably beats Gonzaga. As we've seen all season, Memphis, I don't think, has played a full 40 minutes of, you know, locked in focused basketball. And those last 20 minutes, especially that first 10 minutes out of the half against Gonzaga, really is what sank them. They kind of sat on their heels, maybe came out a little bit too confident. And you can never count out Drew Timmy. He had 2 points in that first half and then went on a tear in that second half. So, you know, we'll see some physical play from Arkansas. I think the issue with Arkansas is that they don't necessarily have the depth physically in the front court to match up against this Gonzaga team. You're going to see quite a bit of players like Connor Vanover come in likely to try and just put bodies on them. But where Memphis's front court is one of the best in the country, Arkansas isn't quite there. They have Jalen Williams, who's one of the best forwards in the country, but he invites a lot of contact and that could lead to some fouls. So it's going to be an interesting game. I think that they're both set up for a really good Sweet 16 matchup. But if Arkansas can't control their own possessions, finish every possession with a shot, it's going to be tough for them to keep up.
And is there any concern about Gonzaga's free throw shooting in this game as well? Because it's a Gonzaga team that, take a look at the last three contests, they've been shooting right around 59.5% at the free throw line. We wound up seeing a bunch of brick free throws here in the NCAA tournament, and I think that that could come into play against a relatively solid Arkansas team that is willing to get physical with you.
No, absolutely. Gonzaga's free throw shooting has been an issue basically every NCAA tournament that they've played over the past couple of years. Part of that, I think, is a factor of the fact that they rely heavily on their bigs. Drew Timmy's not a great free throw shooter. Chet Holmgren generally is. He wasn't great. I know Watson missed a couple front ends. Julian Strother wasn't great, but their backcourt has been good. Bolton hit both his free throws. Andrew Nembhard went 6 of 7. So as long as Gonzaga isn't getting fouled too often on their front court players, which, you know, might become an issue, it's kind of a double-edged sword. You want Timmy to have to beat you from the stripe, but you also don't want to foul out. That's really an interesting conundrum when you're a defense that's facing the Zags.
I certainly do think it's going to be fascinating to see what we wind up getting in that Sweet 16 game, as we do have Connor Oppo of HXCBB joining me right here on the podcast. And then another one seed that we know has been able to survive in advance, that'd be Kansas. They're going to be taking on a Providence team that a lot of people have been calling them lucky, but I would say that it's one of those things in which, yeah, Providence has been able to get those late game breaks, but don't let it take away from the fact that this is a relatively solid team. Don't be blinded by just the last few minutes of the game. Take a look at the entirety of it. Now, Remy Martin has been a big key for Kansas, and with Kansas being in a really good fight against Creighton, I gave Creighton more credit than anything else with that regard. I felt like Greg McDermott did an absolutely terrific job in being able to coach up a team that was relatively banged up. Creighton was able to bury their threes, but I do think that this Sweet 16 game is going to be fascinating. I do think that you're going to see Kansas be able to survive in advance, but I do think that there is a little bit of something to a Providence team that time and time again, in close games, they have been able to claw them out, and I do think that this is going to be a game in which Providence is going to be able to give Kansas a relatively good battle.
Yeah, Remy Martin's the key right there, because if Remy Martin disappears like he did for parts of that second half against Creighton, you know, Providence could be in this game, and people may call it luck. I kind of call it grit. Providence wins close games, and while their metrics don't necessarily match their record, especially in those close games, I mean, that's a factor. If it's a close game coming down the wire, Providence has all the experience in the world, you know, winning those games. I think, you know, if Remy Martin is playing like the Remy Martin of that first half, Kansas is just too big, too good, too high scoring for Providence to really have much of a chance in this game. I mean, we have to remember, right? Providence, yes, Richmond beat Iowa, but they played two teams that rank, I believe, outside the top 75 in KenPom. And so Kansas is going to be the first kind of true Final Four contender test for this Providence team. And it'll be interesting to see how they adjust to just playing a much more athletic, much more skilled team.
I am right there with you, Connor. And when it comes to the NCAA tournament in general, something that I'm noticing is that defense has been winning out. I know that you wound up having a great tweet about so many of the teams that they wound up going out early as big seeds. The fact that they all wound up having one thing in common, poor defense. As we're recording this right now, we have no idea if Purdue wound up surviving and advancing, but really the lone team with a bad defense that has been able to survive and advance, that'd be North Carolina. You even take a look at St. Peter's, the upsets that they've been able to pull off. They're a team that they really do hang their head on. Defense, top shot blocker in all of college basketball last season was Casey Undefu of St. Peter's. And I do think that when it comes to March, defense really does wind up winning out. I think that that's been on full display here in the NCAA tournament thus far.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, even if you just look at the first round upsets, right? Those 1-6 seeds that lost in the first round all had defenses, I believe, outside the top 25 heading into those games and outside the top 30 by the end of those games, including Kentucky. Kentucky was right at 25 on KenPom prior to their game, I think was 35 now. Defense always puts you in a position to at least have a shot at winning. You can score as much as you want, but if you don't have a good defense, you're not going to be in a position to win. And defense does that for you. I'd be interested to see what happens if Texas beats Purdue. At the time of this recording, obviously, that game hasn't gone on yet. But if that's the matchup with St. Peter's, it'll be really interesting to see what happens because Texas can go on some slumps offensively. I think Purdue's offense is a little bit too good, too big, too dominant for St. Peter's to, in my mind, have a legitimate shot at the Elite Eight. But Texas goes on slumps. And so if that's the matchup, that I think is going to be a very fun one to watch just because both teams are pretty good defensively. And Texas doesn't necessarily have the most efficient offense all the time.
Yep, the Texas offense certainly has had their falters throughout the year. Now, the good news is Marcus Carr has been able to cut down on those turnovers, but certainly, especially without Trey Mitchell in the fold, it has been a little bit of a suspect Texas offense. And when it comes to suspectness, you've got North Carolina, who on defense, I mentioned it, they're really the lone team as we're recording this, with a bad defense that has been able to survive and advance to the Sweet 16. UCLA is a team that they've been able to do a good job all season long with regards to the defensive side of the ball. Now, Jaime Jaquez is dealing with a little bit of an injury that he wound up sustaining in the round of 32, and Johnny Juzang just throughout the last few months in general has been a little bit banged up, but even without Jaime Jaquez, and he's got some time to rest up. This is going to be a game that's going to be played on Friday, so he's got a full week to be able to heal. Even without him, I still favor UCLA against North Carolina because I mentioned it. It just seems like defense winds up winning out here in March. I do like UCLA to be able to survive in advance against a North Carolina team that they deserve their flowers for the way that they've been able to put things together. But I take a look at this UCLA team, and I am very impressed by them. And like I said, even without Jaime Jaquez, I do think that they're going to be able to survive in advance against North Carolina in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I do too. If both Juzang and Jaquez can play and can play efficiently and effectively, UCLA should win that game. Jaquez hasn't looked the most efficient. I mean, he looked good in that second half against St. Mary's, but, you know, obviously in the first half and in the last couple of weeks, he hasn't looked the same as he did earlier on in the season. Jaquez is probably the most important player for UCLA. One thing you do have to take into account, though, is if they're both hurt and they're heading into a game that should heavily favor North Carolina in terms of fan support, it'll be interesting to see how that plays out. But the key to this game, really, for me, if neither of them are able to be effective one-on-one, is Tiger Campbell. And I think Tiger Campbell, one of the best point guards in the country, North Carolina doesn't really have a point guard like Campbell. And so even if Akas and Juzang, you know, on there, both of them have lower body injuries, if they can't be the shot creator, Tiger Campbell can set them up where they just have to spot up and shoot, which they can be effective at as well.
I think that that's a great point that you bring up. Tiger Campbell really has been terrific for UCLA this season. Last year, his shooting was a liability, but he was able to take care of the ball. Still taking care of the ball, a top 10 team with UCLA with regards to fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. Now he's shooting 40% from three. He has had a little bit of a dip here in the last few months, but still shooting it really well compared to last season. And Connor, when it comes to everything that we're going to be getting in the Sweet 16, we've hit on a couple games. Is there another team or two or game or two that you're very curious in seeing? Because I do think that we've got ourselves a very good Sweet 16. No shortage of headlines when it comes to favorites, underdogs, what have you. What else are you going to be looking for in the Sweet 16?
I think the biggest Sweet 16 game, if it comes to fruition, and I'm confident it will at the time of this recording, is Arizona-Houston. Arizona in their first game, I know they controlled it from tip to buzzer, but they had, 19 turnovers? Kirk Risa is a huge piece to this Arizona team, and he's not playing this weekend. And if he plays next weekend, is he going to be 100% against a Houston team whose backcourt is one of the best, if not the best, in terms of creating havoc and creating those turnovers and just being a nuisance for opposing point guards? It'll be interesting because you can survive some of these games, against Wright State with having almost 20 turnovers. But as we saw in the game against Illinois, Houston created a lot of their offense off of turnovers and points in transition. It'll be interesting to see Kreese is fully healthy for that game, because I think that could be what ultimately pushes Houston into a situation where they're looking at a game they could win.
And what more can be said about this Houston team? Right around Christmas, they lose Marcus Sasser. They lose Tremont Mark from that backcourt. And yet, it's still a team that is firing on all cylinders. They found a way to be able to get the job done. And you gentlemen over there at Heat Check CBB, you do more than just be able to get the job done. You get the job done very well. All of you guys do absolutely terrific work. You do an amazing job with the Hope and Rolf podcast, which you'll find wherever you get your podcasts. You do a great job covering this sport all 12 months out of the year. So, Connor, love the good people at home. Know how they're able to follow you on social media and just everything that you've got going on in general these next few weeks and, hey, into the offseason as well.
Yeah, you're able to follow me at ConDorianFM on Twitter. You can follow HeatCheckCBB at HeatCheckCBB on Twitter or HeatCheckCBB.com. You can listen to Hope and Ralph on any of the major podcast platforms. I have a couple of articles coming out, either tonight or early this week, top stars from the first weekend, ranking all the Sweet 16 matchups and looking at some of the potential storylines that could be had in the national championship based on those teams that are in the Sweet 16. So lots of things coming down the pipeline, and it's going to be a fun next 2.5 weeks.
It certainly has been fun and will be fun. Who would have thought that a team whose mascot is a peacock would still be alive for an NCAA tournament championship? It's going to be absolutely tremendous to see what we wind up getting. And Connor and all the other gentlemen over there at HeatCheckCBB are going to be following it every step of the way. Always a pleasure to get anyone over there at HeatCheckCBB on this podcast. Today it was Connor that lent absolutely tremendous insight. So big thanks to Connor Hope of HeatCheckCBB for joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VEASAN family of podcasts. And even though we don't have any NCAA tournament games for Monday, we do have some CBI and College Basketball Classic games. So coming up next, I'm going to give you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots. And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Hoops with myself, Greg Eubskies, and now part of the VEASAN Family Podcast. It is always a pleasure to get our good friend Connor up on the podcast. Everyone over there at HeatCheckCBB does absolutely tremendous work. Connor is a big part of everything that they wind up doing, everything from the podcast, the Hope and Ralph podcast, which you're able to find wherever you get this podcast, R-A-U-F on the last name spelling on that. And he also does absolutely amazing work with regards to their written work as well. So big thanks to him for joining me in the last segment. Now it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter feed at JarenSquirty1. At the time of recording this, this is right around 7 o'clock p.m. Pacific time. We've got no numbers up for the 4 CBI games, so makes things a little bit brutal there, but I've got my handicap on all 4 of those games. You can expect those games to be populating in the very early a.m., and we very well hope so, because we've got a game that's going to be going on before noon with regards to what we're going to be seeing out there in the CBI, so it's going to be very fascinating to see what we wind up getting out there. And we are going to be starting out with those CBI games because they're first in the rotation, and it begins with 601-602 on the betting board. Drake and UNC Wilmington are going to be doing battle. I want to make a Drake a 6-point favorite. I set this total at 140 now. With what we've seen out of UNC Wilmington, it has been absolutely tremendous. This is a punch that has now been able to win 21 out of their last 25 games. You do take a look at this Drake team as well, and this is a team that may have legitimately had a shot to be able to go to the NCAA tournament as they played very well in the Missouri Valley Conference. They were unable to get the job done there, but I do take a look at this team, and at minimum, Drake belonged in the NIT, in my opinion. And this is a very talented bunch that is headlined by Tucker DeVries, being able to give you 14 points, 4.5 boards. Drake as a whole, they rank in the top 50 with regards to points scored on a per-possession basis. And you do take a look at this UNC Wilmington team. What they do a very good job of is not turning the ball over. They are turning the ball over right around 10.5 times per contest, and they also do force right around 8 steals per contest with regards to steals on a per-possession basis. One of the better teams out there in college basketball, but Drake, they do a good job of being able to be relatively buttoned up. Is a bunch that only turns the ball over right around 12 times per contest, so I do think that that's going to be able to serve them very well. And you take a look at both of these defenses, neither of them are great, neither of them are terrible. You've got a Drake team that, with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis, they are clocking in right in the neighborhood, about 110th, and you take a look at UNC Wilmington, and they're a team that they are right around 170th, but with UNC Wilmington, no real drop-off with regards to home and road splits. Both of these teams, they do play relatively under control as well, both of these teams outside the top 200 with regards to possessions per game, but as we know, when it comes to these non-NCAA tournaments, things seem to get a little bit more harebrained with them. You have to deal with a couple of injuries for the Drake team, the biggest of which DJ Turn It Up Wilkins, a guy that's able to shoot 39% from three-point range, 10.5 points per contest. You take a look at UNC Wilmington, and this team is going to be one that is full go, but with Drake, they also did wind up getting a day of rest. UNC Wilmington, they're going to be playing a little bit of a back-to-back here as well. You do have Jalen Sims, who I really do like for this team. Heart and soul guy, who is able to give you 16 points, 5.5 boards, 2.5 assists, shoots in the mid-30s from three-point range, and then you take a look at Shaquem Phillips, coupled with Michael Kudu. Both of these guys combined for 24 points per contest. They both shoot right around 35% from three, and your top three scorers all shoot at least 75%. And at the free line, you've been able to get some good production recently as well out of James Baker, a guy that's able to give you 7 points, 4.5 boards, has come in from Morehead State and has been able to do a relatively solid job of being able to give this team a little bit of consistency, right around 1.5 per contest as well at 6'7". But Shaquan Emphill, a guy that's able to give you 10 points, 5 boards, I think that he's going to be able to do a solid job down low for this Drake team. And Roman Penn, he dealt with quite a few injuries throughout the season, but has really been able to rein it in with regards to being able to dole out the ball. You take a look at what he's been able to do, and he's been able to give you at least 3 assists in every one of the team's games ever since Valentine's Day. So he has been able to do a nice job running efficient offense, 3 turnovers or fewer in all but one of the team's games ever since the game that they wound up playing against Northern Iowa that wound up going to overtime on the 5th of February. So I do take a look at this spot. I wound up setting my total at 140. Pair of teams that aren't necessarily Blazers, but pair of teams that are okay, not great on defense. I do think that you wind up getting a little bit of late game fouling. Drake is a team that you're able to trust in at the free throw line, right around 75.3% at the charity stripe. Meanwhile, UNC Wilmington, team that shoots right around 72.5% at the free throw line. So I'm looking at a total of 140 and made Drake a 6-point favorite. 603, 604 on the betting board. UNC Asheville and Northern Colorado do battle. Northern Colorado, I wound up setting as a 7.5-point favorite. Made my total 153. Now, if you've got a Northern Colorado team that has played no defense at all this season, they rank outside of the top 310 with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis. And then you take a look at our good friends UNC Asheville, and hasn't necessarily been the world's greatest year for them on defense either, though I will get into Drew Pember in a second, one of the better shot blockers that you're going to find in all of college basketball. But Asheville is a team that they rank right around 150th in the country with regards to points allowed on a per-possession basis. I mentioned it with Mr. Drew Pember. How about this gentleman? He's been able to give you 15.5 points, 6.5 boards, has been able to block 3 shots per contest, so he has been an absolute dominator with that regard. And a guy that, despite being 6'10", he's been able to shoot 35.5% from three-point range in a road and neutral court environment that winds up going to 38%, but Northern Colorado, this is a team as a collective. They're shooting right around 38.5% from three-point range. Each other top three scores shoot above 41% from three-point range, including Dallin Counts, 21 points, 4 boards, shooting 41% from three-point range. You've had a pair of guys in Drew Cookshausen, who led off college basketball and made three-pointers 2 seasons ago ahead of Marcus Howard in that 2018-20 season, and Matt Johnson be able to combine for about 25 points per contest. Johnson has seen a little bit of fall off with his numbers. He's been doing a little bit more facilitating, a little bit less scoring, but you still have Bodie Hume, who during the 2020-21 season was the ultimate stat sheet stuffer. 16 points, 7 boards, a block, a steal per contest this year. More on 11 points and 6 rebounds per game, but you take a look at it, and it has been Hume time. He's been able to give the team at least 5 assists in each of the last 5 contests for this team. That's done a good job of being able to facilitate some good clean offense, averaging a steal per contest. So I like what I'm seeing out of him. And then you take a look at what you're able to get down low. Kerr Jongkuc has been able to give you 8.5 rebounds per game. Should be able to win the battle down low against a UNC Asheville team that really, outside of Drew Pember, you haven't had a lot of rebounding. Tayshaun Jones has been able to give you 5.5 rebounds per game. Nobody else gives you more than 4 per contest, as Jameson Battle does give you 8 points per contest, but shoots 23% at the free throw line, really doesn't dole out the ball. LJ Thorpe along Trent Stephanie, they combine to be able to give you right around 7 assists per contest. Sharp is shooting right around 40% from 3-point range, and Tayshaun Jones more on 39% from distance. This is a UNC Asheville team that they're not necessarily looking to gun it, but at the same time, they're certainly not a slow team either, so I think it's going to be very intriguing to see what you wind up getting from a tempo perspective, because this is a Northern Colorado team that they play a little bit faster, but they're once again not a team that's necessarily going to be playing with their hair on fire. Among your 358 D1 teams, Northern Colorado clocks in right around 75th, with their possessions per game. UNC Asheville is more around 96. So I did wind up setting my total at a 153.5 and made Northern Colorado a 7.5 point favorite. 605, 606 on the betting board. Boston U and Middle Tennessee are going to be doing battle. I wound up setting Middle Tennessee as a 5-point favorite. They are going to be without, once again, Josh Jefferson, heart and soul guy for this Middle Tennessee team. And in their first two games without him, it was a little bit of a rough go of it, but they seem to have been able to pick up a little bit of upward momentum, and I do like what I'm seeing out of them right now. They're going up against the Boston U team that they've been league average with regards points allowed on a per possession basis. This is a Boston U team that they really look to slow things down to a crawl. They're outside the top 325 with regards possessions per game. You do have Javonte McCoy along Sukmail Mathon, who are able to combine for 33 points per contest. Mathon is able to give you 10 rebounds. McCoy shoots 44% from 3-point range, and for Boston U, they were able to come back from double digits against UNC Greensboro yesterday, but I do think that a key is that Middle Tennessee is going to be a little bit more of a rested team. They didn't wind up having to play yesterday, so I think that that works in their advantage. And you take a look at a pair of guys, Donovan Sims and Eli Lawrence. They both combine to give you 22 points per contest. Both of these guys give you between 4.3 and 4.4 boards per game. DeAndre Dishman, the only guy that's able to give you 5+ rebounds per game for Middle Tennessee, so they're going to have a little bit of a tough time against Mathon, but this is a Middle Tennessee team that they've been doing a good job of being able to force turnovers. They get 8 steals per game. Meanwhile, got a Boston U team that they're going to turn the ball over right around 12 times per contest. Walter White, he's been breaking bad with 13.6 rebounds per game. You take a look at him, and he's been relatively rock solid for this team, especially down low. He's been able to give you at least 5 rebounds in each of the team's last 6 contests, has scored at least 8 points in each of the last 6 games as well. So I do like what I'm seeing out of him, but that said, this is a Boston U team that they really don't have a lot of depth. Middle Tennessee, they certainly have a lot more depth, and I like what I'm seeing out of Cameron Weston as well. Weston is a guy that has been able to do a nice job dishing out the ball, 3+ assists in each of the team's last 4 contests, a guy that is able to generate a steal per contest as well. Really, for Middle Tennessee, each out of your top 4 scorers are going to be out there on the floor in this one, do generate at least a steal per game. Middle Tennessee, they are good at the free throw line late as well, shooting as a collective 76% at the charity stripe. Middle Tennessee has been able to do a great job of being able to exceed expectations. Boston U has been relatively shaky with regards to their defense. This is a team that they enter having given up at least 68 points in now 4 of their last 6 contests, so I did wind up setting this total at a 133.5. I do think the Boston U could be able to get their slow, methodical style, and you take a look at Middle Tennessee, aside from that 3 overtime game that we wound up seeing against UAB, and when you wind up going to 3 overtimes, well, that's just a little bit of a calamity. In every single game that they played this month, they have been able to hold their opponents to 68 or fewer. So I did wind up going lower with this total 133.5 with Boston U's tempo, and I did wind up making Middle Tennessee a 5-point favorite. 607, 608 is the last of the CBI games. You've got yourself Ohio and Abilene Christian. All these games, by the way, taking place in Daytona Beach, Florida. I wound up setting Abilene Christian as a 3-point favorite and your total 144. I really think that both of these teams in this pod have a chance to go up against perhaps a Drake in the title game, because these are two teams that I am very bullish on. You take a look at Abilene Christian, and I do think that their style does pose a little bit of a threat to an Ohio team that they've been good at being able to take care of the ball all season long. This is an Ohio team that, even though Jason Preston is out of the fold, Mark Sears has been able to pick up the pieces and has been able to do a great job at the point guard spot. 19.6 boards, 4 assists. Guy that shoots 41% from 3 and 89.5% the free throw line. Ben Vanderplas, Jason Carter, both of these guys give you 14 points per contest. They combine to be able to give you 13.5 rebounds. You've got Vanderplas is able to shoot 34% from 3, and then you've had Tommy Schmack and Ben Roderick combined to give you 13 points. Schmack is able to shoot 38% from 3. And this is an Ohio State team that they only turn the ball over right around 10.5 times per contest. So I do like what I'm seeing there. But with regards to turnovers forced on a per possession basis, Abilene Christian entered this tournament forcing a turnover on 28% of possessions. That is number one in all of college basketball. Abilene Christian, a top 35 team with regards points allowed on a per possession basis. Now, with that said, they're giving up right around 16 more points per 100 possessions in a road and neutral court environment. And you take a look at this Ohio team in a road and neutral court environment, they're actually giving up 5.5 points fewer per 100 possessions. So that is actually very beneficial to them, but I do also take a look at this Abilene Christian team, and despite how fast they wind up playing, this is a team that they rank in the top 50 with regards to possessions per game. Ohio, they're more right around 200th. They're a team that they've been able to be in relatively good control. You've got a lot of guys that they mix and match with Abilene Christian. This is a bunch that they're only shooting right around 32% from three-point range, but a team that's only turned the ball over right around 12.5 times per contest, you give them a lot of credit for being able to do such a good job of being able to be buttoned up. Reggie Miller, no, not that Reggie Miller, he and Damian Daniels have been able to combine for right in the neighborhood of about 5.5 assists per contest. Corian Mason, Arian Simmons, both of these guys give you right around 12 points per contest. They will shoot it well from three-point range against Troy, shooting above 35% from distance in that game. It's an Abilene Christian team in which the whole is greater than the sum of its parts, and you had to like what you saw from Cameron Steele coming off the bench yesterday. He wound up having 18 points, 7 boards, a guy that down the stretch has been a little bit hit or miss, hadn't had more than 5 rebounds in each of the team's last 5 contests, but a guy that is able to give you a different look as a 6'8 combo player that's able to shoot 3. So I do like Abilene Christian in this spot. I think that it's just tough to prepare for that pressure defense on very short notice. So do want to make Abilene Christian a 3-point favorite and your total 144 just with the matchup. And now we've got two games that are going to be going down with regards to the College Basketball Classic. And we do have numbers on these games. 861, 862 is up first. You've got USC upstate and they're going to be taking on South Alabama. South Alabama is finding themselves as a favorite in this spot of 9.5 points. Your total on this game, it is 140.5. And DK Nation pick is going to be on this one because I had to pick one of these games because these are the only two games that we wound up having numbers on. But with that said, what I'm going to be riding with is the over in this game. I want to send the total at a 146. Now, you've got a South Alabama team that they have not necessarily been playing at any sort of a breakneck pace this year. Out of 358 D1 teams, they're a team that they're clocking in right around 259th. But with that said, you've got a USC upstate team that they're legitimately playing no defense. They are outside the top 275 with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis. It's an upstate team that they do like playing a little bit faster, right around 110th with regards to possessions per game. And you saw them in a game against Appalachian State in the first round of this tournament really be able to speed things up. And we're going to call it what it is. The Basketball Classic is not one that is going to be attracting a whole lot of defense. You take a look at South Alabama, and with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis this year, they do rank 60th, so they certainly have the edge there. And as a result, I did wind up saying South Alabama as a 12-point favorite. Now, with South Alabama, this is a team that they're a little bit shorthanded because they've really had Charles Manning and J.J. Chandler be the two headline scorers for this team. They're the heart and soul pieces of this bunch, but you do take a look at it, and you've got to figure that once again, you're probably going to be having J.J. Chandler out of the fold, a guy that has been able to give you right in the pocket of about 16 points per contest, a guy that has been able to shoot 35% from three-point range. But with that said, Charles Manning has been able to do a very solid job for this team. He has been able to give you double figures in each of the last three contests, a guy that is able to give you 16 points per game. Then you take a look at the flip side, what you're able to get out of this upstate team, and you've got some of the best three-point shooting that you're going to find in all of college basketball. Bryson Mazzone has been in the zone, 15.5 points, 5.5 boards, shooting 38% from three-point range. And for that matter, among your top five scorers for USC upstate, four of them shoot at least 38.2% from three-point range, including a gentleman that's in the top 10 among qualifying scorers in three-point shooting percentage, Jordan Ganey, 13.5 points. He is able to shoot 52% from three in a road and neutral court environment, 13-plus points in each of the last four contests, 2-plus steals in each of the last five games. It's a USC upstate team that has been able to do a solid job of being able to turn defense into offense. This is a South Alabama team that, with regards to turnovers, they commit 12.5 per contest with their slow style. That is a little bit tough, but at the same time, I do think that they are going to be able to win the battle down low because they've got Javon Franklin, 11.5 points, 7.5 rebounds per game. I think that they're going to be able to do a solid job of being able to go shot for shot in this game as well. You take a look at the South Alabama team, they have been able to score a little bit more recently. They have been able to score 70-plus points in both of their games thus far in March. You take a look at the defense, and it's been a little bit touch-and-go with this team as well. Meanwhile, you take a look at this USC upstate team, and well, defense has been relatively optional for them. They have given up 70-plus points in now four out of their last five contests. Upstate just seems to be a team that they elicit a lot of up-tempo styles. They give up quite a few points. As a matter of fact, they have now given up, I believe, at least 78 points in something like five out of their last 10 games. So I do think that things wind up becoming a little bit more up-tempo in a tournament that, let's call it what it is, it's not necessarily the NCAA tournament with this upstate team. They only have Mazzone being able to give you more than 4.5 boards per game with 5.6. I think that South Alabama is going to be playing a little bit more of an up-tempo style in this one. K.O. Gonsalves, 7.5 points per contest. He's able to shoot 35% from three-point range. You've got to be figuring that we're going to see quite a few minutes in this game as well out of Alex Anderson. Anderson has been seeing more minutes as we're able to give the team right around 6 points per contest in the last three games, has been able to dole out right around 2.5 assists per game in those contests as well. A little bit of a 6'6" combo freshman. So I do think that South Alabama going to get sped up in this game. I think that they're going to be able to do a solid job of taking it to an upstate team that has just been anemic on defense. So the DK Nation pick is going to be the over. Set my total at 146. Made South Alabama a 12-point favorite. So going to be one to lay it here as well. And we do wrap things up with Florida Gulf Coast and Coastal Carolina. So on the betting board, you've got 863, 864 Coastal Carolina. Home team in between 3 and 3.5 point favorites. And your total on this game is anywhere between 144 and 144.5. With Coastal Carolina, I did wind up setting them as a 3-point favorite. So here at 3.5, I'm going to be willing to take the points. I did wind up setting my total at 145. You've got a Coastal Carolina team that they are not necessarily the world's most up-tempo team in all of college basketball. With regards to total possessions per game, they're right around 215th. Meanwhile, you've got a Florida Gulf Coast team that they certainly are looking to push the tempo a little bit more. They're in the top 55 with that regard. It is confirmed that Michael Fly has been canned from Florida Gulf Coast. So this is a team that they're without a head coach right now, which I find to be very intriguing. But you do have Davion Dunmartin, and Dunmartin has been balling out all season long. 21.5 points, 6.5 boards. He shoots 37% from three-point range, 88% at the free line, which is big because Florida Gulf Coast as a collective, they shoot 67.8% at the free line. That's in the bottom 15 all of college basketball. I do think that you're going to be able to have Mr. Samuel be able to hold up at the point of attack, though. Kevin Samuel came in from TCU, has been amazing with 11.5 points, 9.8 rebounds, and 3 blocks per contest. He has been able to give you at least 8 rebounds in pretty much all but 2 of the team's games ever since the beginning of the month of January. So he has been a dominator with that regard. Caleb Cato, Cyrus Largy are able to combine for 18.5 points per contest. Cato shoots 36.5% from 3. Gulf Coast, as a collective, they shoot 35% from distance. Now with Coastal Carolina, they should be able to have Isam Mustafa be able to win the battle down low. But with Mustafa, you've seen it from him recently. He's been a little bit more pedestrian. He has given you 10 points or fewer in 3 of the last 4 contests. Wanda playing just 22 minutes in that game against Maryland Eastern Shore, wound up getting into a little bit of foul trouble. So that is something that you concern yourself with going up against Samuel, Rudy Williams, Vince Gold. These two guys have been able to combine for 29.5 points per contest. They combine to shoot about 42% from 3-point range. And you've got a Coastal Carolina team that they are not necessarily the world's greatest at the free throw line. Right around 69.5% at the charity stripe. They're 13 turnovers per contest. That is a little bit of an issue. Now, you're going up against a Dunk City team that they don't necessarily hang their hat on being able to generate swipes. They only get right around 6.5 steals per contest. Not great, not terrible, but I do think that Florida Gulf Coast going to be able to push the tempo a little bit more in this game with Mustafa showing some signs of being in a little bit of foul trouble, a little bit of injury it seems like as well. I do think that Dunk City going to be able to hold in there. Abri Madiba, who's able to give you 5.5 assists per contest, should be able to dole it out for Coastal Carolina. You do have yourself a Florida Gulf Coast team that with regards to points allowed on a per possession basis has been a little bit of a leaky defense this season as they rank out of your 358 D1 teams 243rd, and now not having a coach that couples with that. But I do think that the guys for this Dunk City team going to continue to fight hard. I do think that defense not going to be at a premium in this game. Set my total at 145 going over at the Coastal Carolina. Made them a 3-point favorite, so now getting the hook. Going to be taking a look at Florida Gulf Coast, and that will wrap things up for the Monday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN family of podcasts. A big thanks to our man Connor Hope of VCheckCBB for joining me in the last segment. If you like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you've got a question, comment, segment idea, whatever you for this podcast, got one or two ways we all fire those in. First one is my Twitter timeline at GUnit_81. Keep in mind, letters M, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please just send these into the timeline. And the other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. From there, you're able to find whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, and that means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.